So good evening, everyone. Oh, well, this is lovely to have people here and to have you out there as well. Thank you very much for coming this evening. And I think as pretty well everyone knows, we're focusing on the Paramitas. This is the topic that Kay selected, our Shuso, for this practice period. And tonight I'm going to be talking about Virya. And this is one that I kind of approach with a bit of trepidation. It's one that I kind of scratched my head over for a while. Virya is the Sanskrit word that's often translated into English in many different ways. Energy, effort, diligence, joyful effort, perseverance, vigor, enthusiasm, zeal, etc., etc., right? So it's used kind of like all those words are selected to translate the word virya. But I think if we take all those together, it does give us a sense of the kind of broad meaning and the depth of virya. It's more than just energy. It's more than just enthusiasm, right? They're trying to get at something a bit more. And virya, of course, is connected to the English word of virility. And the root of virya is vir, which means hero. And connected through history to virtue, which originally was also connected to the word hero, right? A hero is a person who brings forth the various virtues. And in some Buddhist texts, the Buddha is referred to as the great hero. So what is virya in the Buddhist tradition? How are we going to kind of understand it, given we have all this variety of ways of translating the word? Well, one ancient Buddhist text gives the following definition, and I think this is one that's really important for us. What is virya? It is the mind intent on being ever active, devoted, unshaken, not turning back, and being indefatigable. It perfects and realizes what is conducive to the positive, the good. So virya, this quality, is not just, you know, energy, and it's not just enthusiasm, right? It's not like, you know, being 25 or 20 years old and partying all night and getting up the next morning. It's not that kind of energy, although it may include some of that. It's something more. It's directed, focused towards the good, towards the positive. And it's unshaken. And there, it doesn't turn back. Very interesting, these qualities that this one definition offers us. So I don't have myself a preferred English word for virya. And so I'm going to bounce around a little bit in this talk using various translations. But please keep in mind as best you can the kind of scope of the meaning of virya. So in this frantic world of ours, many of us rush around to restore our physical energy. Countless cups of coffee and tea, energy drinks packed with sugar and caffeine, energy bars, donuts, candy, and the like, right? When I was a second-year student at UBC, my mid-morning recharge was the famous UBC cinnamon bun, which was huge. Maybe I exaggerate a little bit, but they were big monster buns, right? Filled with white flour, sugar, it's probably some kind of artificial butter, and they were delicious. At least I thought so at the time. And coffee, right? So that gets me going. And this was always followed by a kind of energy crash by mid-afternoon. I'd kind of have to close my eyes or something. So, and while this unhealthy habit got me through a very tough year, my second year at UBC, it certainly was not sustainable. One of the qualities of virya is it is an ongoing energy, a kind of enthusiasm, energy, drive that doesn't turn back. It doesn't kind of peter out. So I was thinking about this. You know, energy is one of those words that we use that I often have to stop and think, what am I talking about? You know, it's like the word time, right? What is time? You know, we kind of know what time is, and then when someone says, oh, what is it? You try to explain it. It's a little, you kind of have to pause. I think for me, energy is that, has that sense as well. Energy or energeia in the early Greek is a concept that we can read about from, I don't know, from Aristotle to Newton to modern physics. And yet, I'm not quite sure what it is often. In school, we learn about energy in terms of billiard balls kind of crashing around in early physics class, or heat, right, kind of vibration. Heat is actually a kind of vibration, things vibrating faster. Or the flow of electrons, or food that's being converted into movement. But seldom have I heard it used as something we can cultivate as part of our spirit, as part of our spiritedness. We have other words, I think, that kind of show the lack of energy, you know, this depression, listlessness, etc. But not much that really brings forth the vibrant energy of the spirit, of our willingness to kind of offer this life. Now, many people first come to the Zendo full of enthusiasm and perhaps practice diligently for a month or several months, even a year or two, and then kind of drift away. Sometimes their circumstances change. They need to move, to give more time to the family, focus on work. And sometimes the enthusiasm, the energy just kind of peters out. Virya is the paramita to sustain us. When we enter the doldrums of our practice or of our life, when we encounter the hindrances and hardships that will arise in our practice and life. Virya holds us so that we don't peter out. So before we go into looking a little bit more at virya, let me ask you, what is your effort in your life and practice right now? How do you generally feel about making effort? When do you enjoy making effort? And when do you not? And what makes the difference? Is enthusiasm something you have control over? Or is it somehow outside of your control? And when you are in despair or feel quite hopeless about your life or your practice, how do you make effort? And what kind of effort for you is necessary at that moment? And finally, how do you practice with effort or enthusiasm or virya? The early texts tell us that this paramita, this virya, helps us walk the Bodhisattva path, the path of opening up to wisdom, the path of infusing all our actions and thoughts with compassion. Ashantideva, the great 8th century, in the common era, the great 8th century Indian Buddhist monk and scholar, wrote in his famous text, A Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which I think Kate mentioned in the last talk, if I'm not mistaken. He said this: "We cannot make progress without virya, any more than a boat can sail without the wind." And many Buddhist texts really emphasize the importance of this energy, this enthusiasm, this effort, when we face hindrances and when we face challenges. And this is important. This energy is necessary so that we're not thwarted and we give up our spiritual journey. Because as these texts tell us, and the teachers tell us, this Bodhisattva path is a long one, one that will last lifetimes. And to sustain us over vast and perhaps limitless, perhaps the vast limitless time of our practice, we must cultivate virya. We must cultivate this energy. Indeed, some of the texts say virya is the most important of all the paramitas, because without energy, without enthusiasm, effort, how can we sustain all the other paramitas of generosity, good conduct, patience, meditation, wisdom? And these same texts also tell us that this effort is not the effort of gritted teeth, the painful last kind of rep of a bench press, or the mad dash to catch a bus, leaving us breathless. It's not that. What is it? Well, Shantideva, the same philosopher, a Buddhist monk that I mentioned earlier, describes it like this. He says, or he wrote, "What is virya, or enthusiasm, or whatever, however word you want to use?" He said, "It is finding joy in what is wholesome." And I find this very inspiring and a very helpful reminder about the quality of energy or enthusiasm that I want to bring to my practice in my life. Finding joy in what is wholesome. When gladly engaged in what is good, when intent on the path that we're committed to, one can face challenges and obstacles, I think, with a lighter heart. It's okay. And this is the function of virya. In this sense, virya, perhaps we could say, is a kind of attitude, a view that sustains the bodhisattva as she, he, you, as she and she makes effort to awaken, to bring wisdom and compassion into the world, to face the many difficulties of this time, the climate crisis, pandemic, racial injustice, etc. We need to have a kind of limitless energy to face all these things, to not give up, to not turn back. Now, within the Buddhist tradition, there are many stories of figures who have made a great and sustained effort in their practice and in their life. Starting with the Buddha, right? Siddhartha practiced continuously for 6 years before his awakening, making great effort to master various yogic and ascetic practices that were considered very important at that time. And then he spent the rest of his life making great effort to share the Dharma with anyone who was interested? Until his last breath, right? As far as we know, his last question was, any questions? And then that was it. Great effort, beautiful effort. And then Milarepa, the famous 11th century Tibetan yogi and poet, worked hard to gain magical and yogic powers as a young man, which he then used to destroy his family's enemies. Right, it's a great story if you haven't read The Life of Milarepa. Anyway, so young man, out for vengeance, learns all this magical power, and then kills the enemies of his family because they had hurt his family. And then, realizing the terrible karma that he had created for himself, he went out and sought a Buddhist teacher. And he found the great Tibetan teacher, Marpa. And Marpa at first refused to take Milarepa. Very typical story, right? Of teacher says, no, go away. And Milarepa comes back and comes back. And finally, Marpa says, okay, I want you to build a stone house. And so Milarepa builds this house out of stone, right? Kind of typical area in Tibet. And after the stone house was built, he told Milarepa to tear it down and rebuild it. And Milarepa had to do this 10 times before Marpa would teach him the Dharma. Right? Great effort. And to a little more in contemporary times, even today, in traditional Japanese Zen training temples, a young monk or nun who wants to enter training has to sit at the temple gates with head bowed, usually for 3 days, to show their enthusiasm for practice. We should try that here. Sit at the entrance for 3 days, right? Head bowed. So all of these examples seem more like kind of gritted teeth effort, don't they? At least they seem that to me, the effort of endurance, or maybe even the heroic effort. And sometimes this kind of strong, even desperate virya is called for in your life. But this is not the effort or enthusiasm that will sustain us throughout our whole life. Right? There are times when we do need to make heroic effort. But it's not going to carry us through our whole life. There's another kind of virya that we need to cultivate. Remember that earlier definition I mentioned? What is virya? It is the mind intent on being ever active, devoted, unshaken, not turning back, and being always there. It perfects and realizes what is conducive to the positive, the good. And Norman Fisher, in one of the books that's recommended for this practice period, The World Could Be Otherwise, he wrote this. The bodhisattva practice of joyful effort, which is his translation of virya, joyful effort, involves energetic activity in the pursuit of goodness. This means specifically efforts directed toward what is loving and beneficial, toward what expands the heart. Effort in the context of the other bodhisattva practices, generosity, ethical conduct, and so on. It is the effort that expands the heart. So these efforts that I just described by Siddhartha Milarepa, these efforts shown by the young monks and nuns kind of petitioning for entrance into Zen training temples, are, I think, courageous efforts, even if they strike us as a little extreme. But I think they show us another aspect of virya, and that is an attitude of wholeheartedness. Part of our difficulty, I think, in practice and in our life is we are half-hearted a lot. or maybe even a quarter-hearted, right? Kind of at times viewing our practice or some daily activity as something we need to get through in order to reach our real life, in order to really get to where our real life is. The joyful effort of a bodhisattva arises from wholeheartedness. And again, going back to Shantideva, he describes it in a very interesting way. He says, we should be completely focused on the task at hand, intoxicated by it, thirsting for it, like someone making love or trying to win a game. Now, it's not often you have a Buddhist monk talking about the enthusiasm of someone making love or trying to win a game. But that kind of wholeheartedness. Ordinary folk can't get enough of sensual pleasures, which are like honey on a razor's edge. How can we get enough of honeyed acts of practice, which bring us such a sweet result? So as soon as we finish one task, we should plunge into the next, like an elephant, heated by the midday sun, plunging into a cool pool. I love this image of a hot elephant plunging into a cool pool, plunging as wholeheartedness, giving ourselves to the present activity wholeheartedly, plunge into zazen, plunge into washing the dishes, plunge into cleaning the cat litter. I'm working on that one. We have three cats at the moment, and they're big. And so you can imagine what's in the litter box. I won't go into any more detail. Plunge into listening to a friend in distress. There is that famous expression in the Zen tradition, chop wood and carry water. And this is not about getting the task done. It is about the good of the effort. The good of the effort in the everydayness of our lives. Wash dishes and see the good in washing dishes. Stack wood, as Kate and I have done over the past few weeks, getting our wood in, and the goodness of that. And I think we have all noticed that usually when we plunge into something wholeheartedly, energy is just there. Energy arises. Energy meets us. And Norman Fisher, again in that same book I referenced earlier, describes it like this. Joyful effort isn't something you do. Joyful effort is life. It is sharing life. It comes to you from elsewhere, flows through you when you're ready to allow it. Once you stop getting in its way, stop straining, stop thinking, your life is yours and up to you, energy somehow appears. Just enough energy, given the condition of your body and your circumstances. Now, I have often noticed, and Kate and I have commented to each other at times, how often, or Norman's ability to sit throughout the whole day giving interviews in the Doksan room during Seishin, or those kind of periods of intensive practice, right? 5 days, Norman's on the cushion, gets up for breakfast, lunch, dinner, a little bit of rest, but otherwise he's just sitting there. It's exhausting, I would think. And sometimes he is exhausted. But often he can just do that. He enters, I think, a kind of flow. And we have all experienced a flow, right? Or what's the other word? Zone. We're in the zone of something. So Norman can see 50 or 60 people during a session and do it over and over and over again. And we can experience a flow when we are deeply engaged in our activity or our whatever it is, like a craft maybe. Like I know someone who likes to sew and can quite get involved in that. Painting, skiing, playing a musical instrument. I'm not quite sure what to call him, maybe a positive psychologist, Csikszentmihalyi. I think that's how you pronounce his name. He's got one of those names I've never been quite sure of. Csikszentmihalyi. Anyway, maybe someone can correct me. Anyway, he's one of the people who really explored and still explores this idea of flow in activity. And he said this in an interview. Flow, he describes it as being completely involved in activity for its own sake. The ego falls away. Time flies, every action, movement, and thought follows inevitably from the previous one, like playing jazz. Your whole being is involved, and you're using your skills to the utmost. So maybe that is also a kind of description of virya. Now, when I was reading about virya, it seems the traditional texts don't offer a lot of practices about how to cultivate virya. They offer more of them in like generosity and meditation practices. But here are some, how we can cultivate virya. So one of the earliest encouragements is to formulate your vows, your deep intentions, and take steps to remember them throughout your life. For example, the Bodhisattva vows that we chant regularly in the Zendo, but also the personal vows that you have, the personal intentions that you have to understand your present limited view of yourself, and the intention to deeply understand who you fully are. Maybe your vows to live a compassionate and giving life. Or your vow to simply live a good life, however you understand it. Vows, I think, are extremely powerful. Here's an example of a personal vow. Again, I'm picking from Shantideva. For as long as space endures, and for as long as living beings remain, until then may I too abide to dispel the misery of the world. So connected to vows, our deep intentions, and again remembering them, put them on the bathroom mirror, on the fridge. So connected to this, we can exercise mindfulness and deeply consider our actions. Is there a kind of grasping here or a kind of aversion there? Expectations of a result? Are we acting out of habit, compulsion? What values are we upholding in this action that we're doing? And also we can reflect, I think, on the good of what we're doing. Not in the sense of kind of patting ourselves on the back and getting the job done, but the good that we are actualizing in the world. Does that make sense? It's like the texts say it's okay. In fact, it's encouraged to recognize when you've done something good and compassionate and take joy in that. That gives us energy. And it's also positive reinforcement, right? So, in the same light, according to the traditional text, virya is strengthened by compassionate acts and service to others. Bringing harmony to the relationships around you are some examples. To give a smile, a kind look, just to recognize a person begging on the street who often feels unseen by those people passing by. Two more traditional practices are pilgrimage, going on a pilgrimage, and copying sutras or copying religious texts. I sometimes have copied out the Heart Sutra in Chinese characters, and it's a wonderful practice. And you can do that too. Maybe writing out the Heart Sutra in English or writing out a chant that deeply resonates with you. Perhaps using good paper, adding some decoration. It's a beautiful practice to do. And pilgrimage is possible as well. Even though we don't have any famous Buddhist sites nearby, perhaps you can go to a park or a favorite quiet place in nature or somewhere that seems sacred to you and offer a chant, offer a prayer, offer a flower. And maybe do this with some regularity. And of course, virya is strengthened by study, reading books on the Dharma, listening to Dharma talks, etc. And of course, virya is also strengthened by taking good care of yourself. Eat good food, nurture good relationships, exercise. All these too are important for virya. And finally, I would say, consider your mortality. As Dogen wrote, "You have gained the pivotal opportunity of human form. Do not use your time in vain. Form and substance are like the dew on the grass, destiny like the dart of lightning, emptied in an instant, vanished in a flash." Well, I started this with some trepidation, and I realized there's so much more to say, or to think about, to start that we could talk about. But I'm going to stop here. I'm looking forward to listening to Kay's talk, I think in two Sundays, on virya, to see what she'll say. But I'd like to give the last word to Shantideva, since I've quoted him so much in this talk. He wrote this towards the end of his kind of talk on virya. He says, "As a piece of cotton is blown about by the wind, we should be blown along our enthusiastic desire to practice the Dharma." So let me just check the time that I... How much time we got? Oh, good. Not too bad. Okay, so we're going to be doing our usual practice of we'll get together in small groups. And I think we'll get into 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Oh, I thought there was 9 people.
I think you might have.
Okay. Anyway, I'll be putting to you in groups of 3. And I have 2 questions you can consider. Just feel free to answer one of them. So when we get into groups of 3, please just introduce yourselves, you'll self-time. Each person will get about, please take about 3 minutes. And we don't talk, cross-talk, or discuss someone else's comments, but just kind of talk from your own heart, from your own experience. So here are the 2 questions. And what are your motivations to keep practicing? And do these ever change for you? So what are your motivations? What gives you the energy, the virya, to keep practicing? And do these motivations change? That's one possibility. Second possibility, how do you work with despondency or listlessness in your life and in your practice? How do you work with despondency or listlessness in your practice? So you might want another way to frame that. What are your sources of virya? How do you cultivate virya right now? Okay, or none of the above, and talk about maybe something that you found interesting in the talk. So for the people on Zoom, if you need to leave, please leave now before I start to put people into groups. And people here, three.
I can join a group today.
Okay, yeah. So Kate, do you want to join a group? And maybe one group over here, one group there. Space yourselves, and maybe one in the kitchen.
So maybe three of you.
And I'll call you back after. Let me just get my... Okay.
So we've got a distance and still hear each other.
Okay, so there'll be three and one group, I think maybe one group of four. And again, I'll call you back in about 9-10 minutes.